Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club. Hello! Can I just say that every time I say Infertility Club, I really struggle to get my mouth around it.
It's a
fertility club.
Yeah, I mean, you would think after all this time that you'd be better at it.
No, not good.
But it's, you know, it's a mouthful.
It's an absolute mouthful.
It's a mouthful.
Another thing that sucks about infertility is saying it.
It's too much. It's a bridge too far. That's the straw that broke the camel's back. Couldn't fucking say it properly. Welcome to the episode, everyone.
Hey, how are you all? Now I can't say anything.
Do you need to go to bed?
Yes.
Are you okay?
I'm so tired. I spent 10 hours. Actually, I'll complain about this later, but I spent a long time in the car yesterday.
Yeah, that didn't sound like much fun.
No. Anyway, how are you, Gabriella?
Yes, very good. Very good.
Yeah. You've been all over the press this week.
I've been plastered all over the press.
You're like Jordan in the early 2000s.
Just like her, yeah. Very, very similar, without the tits.
Do you like how current my cultural references are?
Yes, very good, very good. but yes, we're going to talk about a little bit about my some of the things I've been writing this week.
Yeah.
Aren't we, in a minute?
Yeah, we are.
But yes, I'm buoyed on like infamy and fame and just like, you know.
I enjoyed seeing your lovely face.
Thanks, mate.
My lovely face is due to come out quite soon.
Yes, indeed.
But your lovely face.
This week was my lovely face.
Also, we're going to talk about one of your articles in a bit, but the other one, you in the HuffPost, LinkedIn is on fire with that article.
LinkedIn is the heartland for that one because it's about work, isn't it?
It is, yeah. LinkedIn has surprised me with how much I use it these days. I go on it a lot.
Do you like it? I hate LinkedIn. I don't know how good it would be to be like a LinkedIn person. Do you know what I mean? To be good at it.
I think like it is a very strong word, but I think it's good for work.
It is good for
and
work.
And I'd say my balance of like social media usage has probably tipped off Facebook onto LinkedIn.
Wow. But still like mostly what, Twitter?
Yeah, and Instagram.
Yeah, and Insta. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's interesting. What do you guys think about LinkedIn? Let us know.
I just did LinkedIn journalism the other day and found a really good source through it. And so,
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
What can't it do?
This is not sponsored by LinkedIn.
This is not. But if, again, as usual, if LinkedIn wants to sponsor us, then that's absolutely fine. They can get in touch with our people because we have a huge team of people, of course, who
we do.
Yeah, massive yeah. Team.
It's Gabby and I doing funny voices.
It's me. Hello.
Hello.
I'm Gabby and Emma's ad manager. Yes, indeed. Right, shall we? Who are we talking to today, Emma?
We're talking to Toby Trice, Gabby.
Oh, the lovely Toby Trice. Yeah, he is a racing driver.
He is. And a train driver.
A train driver also, that's true.
Yeah.
Train driver by day, race driver by night.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's mysterious.
And yeah, he's got a very interesting fertility story.
Yeah. It is actually, because when we, like, we kind of take turns researching questions for these interviews. And so quite often I'll kind of hear the story afresh. Like, I've never heard, I don't know what the story is. And that this was one of those ones. And I, like, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
It actually blew my mind.
Yeah, it is. It's a really good story. I basically found him because he hosts a male fertility kind of get-together group for Fertility Network UK, but now is associated with Rod Gilbert's Him Fertility. I don't know whether it's like an aggressive takeover or I'm not sure, but anyway, him and Rod Gilbert and Ian Stones, who is another guy who I've actually spoken to before on Insta about male fertility. Mm-hmm. They host these amazing kind of informal chats for guys, and so yeah, that's how I found him. And yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, he's amazing and just a nice guy as well.
Nice guy. Yeah,
just nice thoroughly to nice people.
Thoroughly nice guy, and also just so nice to talk to a man.
Yeah, we haven't had many of those this season, have we?
Any this Either? Season, really?
Series.
Yeah,
we're not American.
Sorry, darling. Sorry.
No, we haven't. We really haven't. It's nice to get that side of things. Yeah, it was just a lovely chat, wasn't it? Also, I got to tell my I drove round Silverstone story.
Which, oh yeah, here we go. Johnny Big Balls.
I'll post a picture of the car that I drove, and also, so sorry to be a bit like that person, but the guy who was teaching me, he was so hot.
Oh my god, Emma. Well, we can all just close our eyes and try to imagine what he looked like.
No, I'll post it. I'll post it.
Is he in the picture too?
Yeah.
Oh well, I look forward to that then. We all do.
Yeah.
Great.
That's it for today, really, isn't it?
It is. If you would like to order a book,
you can get it on Amazon or bookshop.org or Waterstones.
Yeah.
Or Waterstones.
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 Waterstones. Or any good bookshop, because apparently there's 2,800 copies out there in the wild.
Oh, wow. We need to go find every single one of them and take selfies with them.
Yeah, we do. yeah, so they're kicking about.
Yeah.
Or you can follow us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
Or you can follow us on Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
Or you can, I was going to say, give us a ring. You can email us.
Give us a ring. Here's Emma's phone number.
555. 5555. You can email us.
You can email us. Oh, sorry. At bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com.
Please enjoy the episode, and also the fact that we've only mentioned our book once during the entire intro.
It's remarkable. Hello again.
How are
so
you?
Long.
I know.
What have you been doing since you've been away?
Lots. Mainly discussing how professional we are.
Yes. I was looking at an empty packet of Twiglets on my desk.
Oh, I could
and remembering the horrible decision I made this afternoon, which was to make myself a coffee of the latte description and grab a pack of Twiglets and try to consume them at the same time, which I'm telling you now does not work.
It's too much umami in the Twiglets.
It's not good. It's not a good flavour combination.
And that's a real shame, because Twiglets are actually one of the best snacks out there.
Twiglets are champions, man.
Yeah, and they're quite whole wheat. Are they quite whole wheat?
They are quite whole wheat, yeah.
Like, in a way, quite healthy.
High in fibre, according to the packet.
Well, there you go.
There you go, guys. Regular. Live Twiglet reading. 80% whole grain, high in fibre, baked, not fried.
Well,
I mean, come on.
It's basically like eating cereal, but with Marmite. It's like the two, like when I was a kid, I used to have two courses of breakfast. I used to have cereal, then toast.
Oh, yeah.
So that's like the two courses in one.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a massive digression. Sorry, guys. How are you?
Well, as I was saying, not 6 minutes ago, I spent the whole of yesterday in the car. Oh. And I'm just frazzled. Like, my brain is fried. It's not working.
I'm sorry. Who was driving?
Not me. Oh. John drove the whole way.
And you just sat there.
I just sat there like a princess.
Like a princess being chauffeured around.
Yeah, I did. But still exhausted.
But still very boring and exhausted. Yeah, my husband doesn't drive, so I'm just a bit jealous of the mere concept of sitting and being driven around.
Yeah, he's got a driving test coming up soon, surely.
Yeah, hopefully. He's passed his theory test.
Yay, well done, Mr. Gabby. it's funny. It's just funny what it does to you. Like, it just makes you feel weird.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, it's just, it is exhausting. You're right. Like, even though you're not doing anything, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
But you did loads of stops on the way, right?
Well, I had to stop to interview someone.
Pull over at the side of the road. Yeah.
I had to stop in Bolton to interview someone. And then I had to stop in, well, we stopped somewhere. I can't really remember where, but it was at, he doesn't really like to stop at motorway services. He likes to stop at like a cute little restaurant or a cute little pub.
Huh.
Or somewhere like, somewhere local. And so we stopped at a kind of farm shop come cafe.
Oh.
And had food that wasn't that great, to be honest. Like, sometimes he absolutely smashes it. Like, do you remember when we went on holiday and went to the Beckford Arms?
I do.
Like, probably one of the best places in the world. But then there's also, sometimes we end up at a random farm shop.
I mean, this is quite great. I love this. I mean, I know John is a good planner of holidays, so this does slip into his wheelhouse, doesn't it? He knows a good pub.
This is his two wheelhouses, which is holiday planning and food.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
He will not accept substandard food. Actually, no, that's true. That's not true. He will accept substandard food. He will not accept chain food.
Right. God, I love a good chain sometimes.
So do I.
Can't beat it.
Do you know what I really miss? I haven't been to for years, and I think they might have all closed down, is Cote Brasserie.
Oh, no, they're still around.
Are they?
Yeah, fear not. They're still around.
That's great,
yeah.
Because you get a steak and chips for like 10 quid,
mm-hmm.
and it's just great, and it's so reliable.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you fetch up a random farm shop, it might not be good.
I love a Oaxaca or a Wagamama.
Oh, yeah.
Two of my favourites.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, again, what are we doing? Talking about food. It's not a food podcast.
Right, so we're kind of theming this podcast, aren't we, a little bit?
We are kind of, yeah. I suppose this we kind of sometimes talk about topical infertility subjects in this section.
We do.
And, but today I had a piece come out in the Telegraph, so I wanted to kind of mull that over a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of also linked to the chat with Toby.
It is very linked.
Yeah, because I was writing about male factor infertility
mm-hmm.
and how basically it's not really treated, and that because IVF is offered when there's male factor, it means that the problem itself isn't ever solved.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, it's really interesting when you think about it like that, because obviously, especially, well, for me, the route that the NHS sent us down was beneficial. It worked.
Yeah.
But that's not always the case. And it's just kind of, you know, we were talking to Jonathan Ramsey, and he obviously is big on the kind of like, why are we not treating these men?
Yeah.
Why are we not investigating? This is wrong. It's just very interesting.
It is very interesting. And it's you know, it's this thing of like women having to basically take the flak for something that's wrong with men. And obviously it's not the men's fault.
No.
But it's very hard. And it's hard on relationships, right?
It is hard on relationships. But, you know, one of the things I wrote was that, like, look, I'm not upset with my husband that I had to go through IVF, and I'm not upset with the doctors for suggesting we do it, but it does strike us as kind of weird that my husband has a problem and I have to have all of the procedures
yeah,
in order for us to have a kid.
Really odd. Like, I don't know. So it has been called misogynistic by some people, hasn't it? But I'm not sure. I guess it kind of is. It's also like whatever the male version of that is, because it's just men being ignored.
Yeah, I don't think it is misogyny because, yeah, the guys don't get treated. And I suppose you could say, well, the guys don't get treated because it, you know, people don't like to admit that the guys are the problem.
Mm.
But that's, I think that's probably beyond that now. Mm. But yeah, and I think it's a hard one to talk about because, you know, as I've said, like, I have so much respect for the world of IVF and the science that's behind it and the things that it does for couples.
Mm.
But it's at sometimes potentially at the expense of the guys kind of solving their issues.
I think I thought this stat from your piece is really interesting. So you said male factor infertility is the most common reason for couples in the UK to have IVF.
Mm-hmm.
Mental. So 37% of cases, female partner issues are broken down into subsections, and for 32% of cases, the cause is unexplained. So that's kind of a third, a third, a third.
Yeah, but it's kind of the reason I think that male factor comes out on top is because I suppose it is a third, a third, a third, isn't it?
Yeah, but it is male factor on top.
Mm. Yeah, I'm coughing.
Yeah, I can.
For fuck's sake, my husband's got COVID. Or he had COVID. He's still coughing his lungs up.
How is the COVID?
Yeah, fine. I'm clear now. I'm in the clear. I think my husband's still faintly positive.
Is he?
Mm.
I haven't got it.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Continue to not get it, which means are you now a bona fide superstar that doesn't get COVID?
I think I might be.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a cold. I've been felled by a cold.
It's a funny one, though, isn't it? I don't want to veer into, or maybe we should veer into COVID, but like a friend of mine, her partner has it confirmed, having hung out with us as well.
Right.
So they were kind of on the hunt. They were like, oh shit, we better test because we're hanging out with us. Mm-hmm. But she was also ill,
mm-hmm.
but has not tested at any point positive.
That's mental.
Mad.
Yes, it is mad. It's an unknowable disease.
It is an unknowable disease. What's going to happen next? Who knows? Anyway, back to infertility. I think that's pretty much it, really. I think, it's bizarre old situation.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I found it quite interesting when I looked at the comments under the piece.
There's so many comments.
Shit.
So I think you have done that classic thing where you focus in on the bad ones.
Yeah.
I think there's some actually quite positive ones in there.
Someone said it was incomprehensible how badly written it was.
I just scrolled past that one. Don't want to say it. Someone else said, oh, you could adopt.
Yeah, there's always one. There's always
Fuck
one.
You. It's people sharing their experiences. We need to start a conversation.
It's good. It is good. Largely.
Yeah.
So yeah, I suppose that's, and it does lead us on very nicely to our chat with Toby.
Take it away, Toby.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you.
are you?
Very, very good. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for finding time for us. And you're an incredibly busy man.
Oh, it's been busy, but no, I feel really privileged for welcoming on the show. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
So we start the podcast every episode by asking people to tell us about their journey.
Wow, it's been a tough one. It must have been 7 years to this month, January 2022, we started our journey. It's been a ride. I'm not going to lie. It's been a ride. We spent the first 5 years of our fertility journey with all the focus and, you know, inverted commas, blame on my partner with polycystic ovaries and kind of searching for, you know, why can't we conceive? Two rounds of IVF later that was NHS funded, unable to afford much more. And then we spent a year out in 2019 just kind of finding ourselves again because we kind of lost ourselves and, you know, our relationship was, you know, not in turmoil, but we just needed, you know, Katie and Toby back. We needed some fun back in life.
Takes its toll, man.
Absolutely, yeah. And then I did some bits and pieces around motorsport, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little while. But that kind of led me on a path of being an ambassador with Fertility Network UK, which I'm so, so proud to be part of. I then met some amazing urologists in London, got talking to various people in the male fertility space. And it turned out after 5 years, actually, it was me that was the problem. I was the person that was infertile, technically.
It took five years to realise that.
Yeah. So I had a test done about 5.5 years into our fertility journey, which was to look at the DNA fragmentation of my sperm.
Oh, yeah. That old chestnut.
Yeah. And the screening process up to that point, you know, no one ever mentioned anything more than just a basic semen analysis for me. So why would I question it? I don't know. I'm not a professional. I'm just some layman that's going through this, you know, hoping to have a child at the end of it. And I met Jonathan Ramsey, really well-regarded urologist, absolute legend.
We love Jay Rams.
Yeah, he's a good guy, right?
Yeah.
And he mentioned to me about having a DNA fragmentation test done and an ultrasound, of which I had both. And it came back and concluded that I had a very, very high level of DNA fragmentation. Essentially, I was infertile on paper, and I had a varicocele. The varicocele was causing the problem, and he suggested for me to go and have surgery to have that sorted out. So a bit of plumbing on my blood. And I went to a guy called Stephen Moser, who's the surgeon that worked for me in November 2020 now, and with the hope that would improve the DNA fragmentation, and then hopefully we'll have a better chance of another round of IVF. So had that surgery in 2021. 3 months later, I was booked to go and see Jonathan Ramsey to do the test again and check that I, you know, had improved and whatnot. Yeah. And I remember joking to my partner, I'm very much one of these guys that likes to see the most optimal and optimistic way possible and try and be quite bright and vibrant. And I remember saying to her, you know, just weeks before this test that I was booked to go in London have, and I said, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I cancel this? And we were pregnant, you know, kind of like tongue in cheek, you know, by this point, 6 years into trying, we were both sort of like, nah, it's not going to happen, but we'll joke about it anyway. That was kind of how we dealt with it at the time. And I kid you not, the week before I was going to go to London, have this test, Kate and I had our very, very first ever positive pregnancy test.
Oh my God.
9 months later, my little boy Oliver was born. So an absolute miracle. Yeah, I'm still overwhelmed. You know, he's now 6 weeks old. It's been a journey. It makes me feel really emotional just actually talking through that quite quickly.
God,
but
yeah. What
a ride.
That's literally a fairy tale.
It really is, yeah.
Well, our kind of fairy tale, I suppose. Not the
in our world. It's amazing that the test led to that and then the varicocele surgery. And it's just that because the reason I say that is because there's so many people are kind of on the fence about whether or not varicocele should or should not be operated on, and the impact of it. And to hear your story, that's a real kind of, it's a real plus in the old take action camp, isn't it?
Yeah, massive. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, I think like many couples, I'm talking from our story, is we were kind of a bit rubbing the headlights, follow the process, go to IVF, and that's the kind of cure, that's what you need. But the whole time that clinic was working with essentially dead sperm, you know, the DNA inside it was never any good. And I remember when I first saw Jonathan Ramsey, I felt a little bit apprehensive about, actually, is this even going to work? Because why is it not being mentioned before? And I questioned that. And you know, when I had my results back about my varicocele, it was really severe, and I just learned to cope with it throughout my life. And I did have aches and pains, and I did have the kind of obvious signs, but I just did the guy thing and ignore it.
Yeah.
And pretty much through my IVF journey, I pretty much ignored my emotions. So, you know, I wasn't going to sit there and start, you know, picking what the process was. And it's amazing how badly that affected the DNA integrity of my sperm. And the only way I can kind of describe it, from listening to the professionals and trying to make it in the most layman terms possible, the factory was too hot, and therefore the sperm was being made a bit bad. So a little bit of plumbing, and you know, made all the difference. It's insane.
So is it worth mentioning here that, you know, we do, as a kind of matter of routine, we do semen tests on men, but they're, what they're looking at is literally the shape and how good they are at swimming, right?
And how many of them there are.
And how many of them there are. So when we talk about morphology, it's literally like, what do they look like?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they don't ever look inside.
Yeah. No one looks at the DNA.
To see the quality of the DNA, yeah. Well, they do if they do this test, but it's not routinely done on the NHS.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing is, I had through various of my semen analysis, my morphology was always a slightly little bit low, you know, slightly suboptimal. But I was always reassured that actually that's okay, because the rest of them are fine. So why would I question that? But that was actually an indicator that was part of the varicocele, because of the higher temperature that I had, because of the varicocele being present, that does affect morphology. And that's really an indicator. And because I had then had that DNA test done, that flagged up, actually it was really bad. Like, I was on paper infertile, which is quite scary when I actually had semen, but you wouldn't think that I'd be then classed as infertile having looked at the DNA. It was quite scary. It was really, really emotional time, actually, to admit that that was the thing after all that time. I'd watched my partner go through loads of, you know, the rounds of IVF, and yet we didn't need it.
So much trauma in that, and to find out it was not needed is difficult. But then I want to ask you, I think lots of guys who might listen to this would be potentially scared of the process of the embolization, because it doesn't sound like a heaps of fun. What was the process like?
Do you know what, I'm someone that watches someone have a blood test, let alone me have a blood test, and I'll almost pass out. I get quite squeamish of needles, not particularly pleasant. And you know what? When I went and saw Stephen, and he reassured me of the process and stuff, and I remember feeling so nervous before I laid on the theatre table. Once I laid down and the procedure started, I was sat there chatting to the anaesthetist, like, what really? I was up to that weekend. Honestly, I was so chilled out. My heart rate was like 60 BPM. I was so chilled, and actually I just kind of watched on this screen in front of me the surgeon, you know, kind of navigating his way around and doing his work, and I found it so fascinating. There was a tiny bit of discomfort a couple of occasions when there was this solution put in just to help kind of set things in place, but genuinely I had a paracetamol, and that was it. And then a couple of hours later I was out. Yeah, nice and simple. But I was bruised the next day. I felt pretty sore the next day, but like the process was there's nothing.
So you lying down in this situation, or are you sitting up?
Yeah, lying down, wide awake. Right. And you can see on the screen kind of like this little, you know, this little instrument sort of navigating through your veins in your abdomen. And then I think I've got like 8 platinum, I think they're platinum or titanium coil springs inside various veins in my body. And they'll be there for life. I can't feel them. And they block those veins that were enlarged, and that sorts my problem. So it's actually quite simple, and it's pain-free virtually. And yeah, a couple of days later, I was, you know, mobile enough to do my normal day-to-day. A couple of weeks later, I was fit enough to go running again. And yeah, here I am. So amazing.
It is amazing. One of the questions I was going to ask you is about the heat of being a racing car driver, right? Because you race for a living.
Yeah.
Has that ever been mentioned as one of the potential reasons, or is that kind of, it was just the varicocele and that's got nothing to do with your profession?
Also, it's worth pointing out that this is the second time we've had a racing car driver on, or a racing car driver's partner.
Awesome. Come back to the question. Being with heat, it was talked about in my other job as well. I drive trains for a living, so I sit down a lot, and obviously that can cause, you know, higher temperatures. But I did lots of things to try and mitigate against it. I kind of used cooling underwear as much as I could, and didn't have baths, didn't do the obvious things, didn't put my mobile phone in my pocket, didn't use laptops on my lap, you know, those things. because the time that I'm in a race car is quite a short space of time versus the rest of my life. So it wasn't really a fact that they were particularly concerned about. But but it's very hot in a race car, I must admit. 60 degrees is not uncommon.
Oh my God.
Did you ever sit on an ice pack?
Yeah, I did. I did all that. And I'm not ashamed to say, you know, I think, and that's what I'm trying to, you know, trailblaze through, you know, my activity that I use motorsport to raise awareness for fertility is I'm really, really trying to promote the fact that don't be ashamed, don't be embarrassed. It's fine to talk about these things because ultimately those conversations I've had has led me to have a little boy, which is amazing. And that's changed my life. And if I was the closed book I was 3 years ago, I'd say now, maybe 4 years ago, before I started all this campaign, I don't think I'd have found the answer, if I'm honest.
What made you open up?
Counselling and the charity. So what happened was, when sort of we got to, I think it was the end of the first or second round of IVF, I hit a really bad low. Like, I was in a bad way. I was looking at quitting my job. I was really like, I'm done of life. Like, I felt really low. And it's because I kind of bottled up my emotions so I could take care of my partner, because she was low the whole time. And I was just kind of like forgetting my emotions, just taking care of her. And then all of a sudden, it all just came out from me. And I didn't really talk to anyone. And when I went to the charity and I got some counselling and got some help, there was conversations that I had with the counsellor about, if you thought about, you know, being open about and actually trying to find people that are also going through what you're going through, because at least you've got something to relate to as a conversation. And at the same time, I was actually going to my racetrack, to which eventually got me to become a racing driver, because that was where I escaped for an hour of the month, you know, while I went racing. And I remember talking to someone at the track, and they had a child through IVF, and all of a sudden this kind of weight was lifting off my shoulder, that actually I was talking to someone about something that actually we've both gone through. And all of a sudden there was this like neutral ground. So then I took the really, really scary move, which I don't actually know why I did it in the end, but I took a really scary move to go to the media and say, look, I'm about to become a racing driver and I'm supporting the charity and I really want to make a difference. And BBC contacted me to do a piece on BBC Southeast News. And they said, do you want to be interviewed? And I was like, I almost said no. And I was sat there going, I don't know. And I did it. And it was the scariest thing I've done. But the minute I did, I had a little bit of trolling, which was inevitable. But the response I had was insanely great. Like, my inbox filled with guys from all across the country, because it went to radio and it just snowballed, all this media campaign snowballed. And now I'm changing the lives of others. And actually, I feel great about that. And so I just really want to champion it, because if you get guys talking, guys are more likely then to ask for tests that are not routinely available. And then they might actually find out there's something that's curable, and actually then they might have children. So once I realized all those things that I could influence, it was a no-brainer for me. I kind of went for it. So scary, but good.
Well done. I think, when talking about it is so transformative. And you don't realize it's going to be that way. Like, you know, we very much did it because it was for ourselves to kind of have therapy.
Yeah, very selfish. With each other.
And it kind of, from there, you realize the impact that has on people hearing it. Why do you think guys struggle to talk about it so much? Is it because they can't imagine that the other people going through it are like them, or they kind of, is it a kind of ego thing?
I think it's quite a societal thing. We often chat in the infertility support group that I run, and we often talk about this, like, why don't guys talk, and why are we so close when it comes to this sort of thing? And I do think it's a societal thing, and also the process of fertility, the guy gets isolated quite early on. Like, I remember being in one of the first consultations that I was with my partner talking about my sperm analysis, but it felt like I wasn't part of the conversation. So straight away, you know, that I'm getting kind of almost removed from the situation, and then it makes you feel quite isolated. And I think having a lot of people around me having children and seeing guys enjoy them, their children, which is lovely to see, you then get isolated from that. And so all these kind of like blocks of isolation you get kind of eliminates you a little bit. And therefore, why do you open up? What's the point? And that's how I felt. And it was a massive step to actually go and, you know, be really open and vocal in the media. But that's exactly why I did it. Cause I was like, if I don't do this, when I've got a really good opportunity to actually try and make a difference, then how many more guys out there are just going to stay quiet? And since I've launched all of my media campaigns and I've been swiping, it's quite surprising actually how quickly male fertility has become on the radar by a lot of people. It seems like a really big topic right now. So I'd love to say I'm a little bit of part of that. Of course, there's many other people that are very vocal, but it's really great to see a shift. And I think if we can keep that momentum going, you know, more couples potentially can have children because they'll get the answers they need. So that's where I look at it.
That's such a nice way of looking at it. I don't I've not really looked at it like that before. It's lovely.
Thanks. But no, it's so important. You know, it's so important. You know, it's, children are a massive life changer. And if you can have them, and if there is an answer for someone out there, and if I can just help one couple or 10 or hundreds or whatever, you know, that's just a little bit of, little bit back I can give to this community and, you know, make a difference. So,
I was quite surprised actually when we were talking about it the other day that my husband said that he spoke to a lot of people at work about it.
Right.
Which like really surprised me. That was his outlet.
Yeah, and that's nice that he's had that. And I think if you're in a place of work where that support and that conversation's available, I think that's really great because you do spend a lot of time at work, and if you can be open, I'm sure it made his working relationships really strong and made him feel more comfortable about being at work. I in the early days was kind of like in my other job, was not really open to talk to other guys because it was quite a male dominated environment where I would hear conversations of, oh, I've got, like, I've honestly had this. Oh, no, she's pregnant again. I've had conversations like that in the room. So then why would I then approach a conversation and go, hey, guys.
But wait, if you're train driving, aren't you just in a cab by yourself?
No, yeah, we are day to day. But we have lobbies and obviously we mix around with other crew and stuff. So you're often with people out throughout the day. But yeah, so, but even at my work, the work that I've done has created the shift there and people have become more open. And I've got guys now that I support at my work and it's lovely. It's just so nice just to make a little difference, you know?
So tell us what happens in the HIM fertility support sessions, because I think they are a great thing. And I've always try and share it when I see that they're happening, because I think, you know, the more guys that can go to them, I think the better, obviously, because as we've discussed, it's very difficult to get guys to open up. So what do you guys talk about?
Do you know what? We talk about lots of different things, not always fertility. It's quite interesting, actually. We kind of, when we created the HIM Fertility Support Group, and before it was HIM Fertility, it was actually just Fertility Network UK Male Support Group. And obviously Rod Gilbert's campaign has adopted this HIM Fertility Support Group, and we host it with Rod now. And he's lovely. He's such a great guy. But between myself, Ian Staines and Rod, we pretty much create an environment that what we wanted from it was not some kind of really clinical counseling type session. We just wanted to create a place that guys can just log in. They can put their cameras on if they wish or not. They can put the microphones on or off if they wish. But it's just a space that we can all come to have a chat. And if anyone's got anything burning on their mind, they can talk about it and we can share our advice and our experiences. And occasionally we do get professional speakers to talk about, you know, particular male fertility topics. And genuinely, we talk everything about food, what we're up to on the weekend, what I'm racing out in the next season, whatever, all the way right through to really complicated and difficult conversations around miscarriage and fertility issues. We cover a hell of a lot. And what used to be a 40 minute to an hour sort of Zoom chat on a Wednesday night now is nearly 2 hours long, and we have a really good in-depth conversation. And we laugh and say we just wing it, and literally that's what we do. We turn up on a night, introduce ourselves, start talking a little bit about a fertility topic or what I'm up to or whatever. Before you know it, we're getting guys saying, oh, can I say something? I've got a little question about this. Okay. And then someone else chips in of their you know, advice or what they've experienced and stuff. And we've had such a great response from it that we've had guys that have since gone away and had their own treatment and that they've fallen pregnant and had good success stories, which is lovely. We've got guys in there that are regulars that have adopted and gone down that channel, and thus they can offer some support. So it's really a big collective of guys now that regularly come along. So when a guy comes for the very first time, he's being welcomed by a bunch of guys that's gone through exactly what this guy's gone through. And we've all got that kind of almost, it's like a bit of a brotherhood almost. It's quite nice.
That is nice.
But it's just a chilled environment. So if anyone's listening and fancies joining, it really is just a cool space to hang out and chat for Tilly.
Brilliant.
How many people show up?
On average, we get between 30 and 50.
Wow.
So we do get quite a lot. It got to a point where it was really busy to manage. The chat box gets really busy and between the three of us, we do wing it. 30 to 50 people. Some nights we get a little bit less depending on, you know, sometimes you're on Friday. That happens. But yeah, we've got a good core of about 25 regulars that come.
Yeah.
That offer their own sort of story and advice, which is great.
Brilliant.
Awesome.
You talked a little bit about feeling kind of sidelined through the process.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, like, if you kind of came up with any techniques to force people to pay a bit more attention.
I think being more vocal was the big take thing for me. And mm-hmm. and I think there is a shift actually in the professional sector, and certainly the awareness work that's going on for male FTD right now is actually encouraging the professionals to be a bit more kind of sympathetic towards the guy. But yeah, I mean, in the latter part of my treatment, I was a lot more vocal, and that only came from the confidence I had from the counselling that I had. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, you know, it's not all the professional's fault. It wasn't all my fault. It's kind of a combination of the two. So that helped a lot, really. And I think, you know, if you do ask questions, they will answer them and they will treat you as part of the equation. But I think there's still some work to be done. But it all just comes down to making people aware that actually the guy is suffering too. It's very difficult going through fertility. And, you know, when you decide as a couple to have a baby, you both really want one, right? It's a big emotional story.
Together.
Yeah,
absolutely. Do you want to tell us about how the racing's gone? How does it all work?
Yeah, that's a bit of a mad one. So if I rewind back to how I got into racing, I said earlier on that I used to go to a local karting track, Butmore Park, for an hour a month just to go racing, just to escape from dealing from my headspace. It was where I could let all my anger, frustrations out in a really positive way. And I remember competing up there in a series thinking I'd be able to go and win. And I remember the first time I went, I got my ass handed to me. I was terrible. but I learned quickly, and I was running at the top of a British championship and got voted as one of Butmore's drivers of the year, and it just escalated from nowhere almost. It was a really surreal thing. And a sponsor approached me and said, look, Tobes, have you thought about becoming a racing driver? And at the time I was 28, thinking, what's this guy talking about? You know, I'm going for an absolute, you know, crazy life story at the moment of trying for a children. You know, I couldn't possibly consider looking at becoming a racing driver. So anyway, I went off to Brands Hatch and had a go in his race car just to sort of see him out. He invited me to become a racing driver that year and have a go.
What kind of car was it? Sorry.
So that was a Ginetta, which is a kind of British made race car.
Lovely.
And so I took the opportunity up, and Katie supported me better. She said, look, why don't we just take a year out? This might be a really fun year. And then in a year's time, we can go back to the fertility and we can go with the fresh head. And actually, it was a really good idea. And so I then decided to then amalgamate that as a fertility campaign. And I call it Racing for Fertility. I went to all of the commentators around the country. We race on ITV4, and I've got a big media presence now within motorsport, so much so that we get mentions throughout the weekend where tens of thousands of fans are there, and
amazing.
People hear about my fertility story over the commentary, and people come down to the paddock and see me and talk about fertility. And it's really special, actually, because we get guys come down to the paddock talking about fertility in the motorsport paddock, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then we sat 2020 out because of the pandemic. And then last year, we got a really good opportunity to race in a much bigger series. And I became British champion. And the hard work throughout the season, I always said that if I become champion, that trophy is for every single person out there that is suffering from infertility. And I was going to do my absolute utmost to win that trophy, to hold it and raise it for all those couples suffering. And I was on ITV4 racing at Silverstone, and I won the championship and got crowned, and I was in the race car absolutely bawling my eyes out because it just meant so much that I could finally lift that trophy for all those couples. And that's what it represented to me.
That's amazing.
I became British champion, and we're now looking at the next season, which is coming up very soon. And I've just become a Porsche racing driver. So,
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. And we're just now going to continue the campaign. We've got various fertility awareness days where we're going to invite men that are going through fertility issues down to the track and have a go in a race car as a bit of an icebreaker.
I've seen you in group photos with guys on the racetrack.
Yeah.
Obviously, we can't go. How does one get involved?
My husband might want to get involved.
So that's advertised through the charity. So we do host that event for Fertility Network UK and the HIM Fertility Group. And yeah, we're going to host various events across the year where we're just going to invite guys along, bring some professional speakers. Quite like how we do the HIM Fertility Support Group nights, just that we've got a race car and we can get on the track and send some people around for some hot laps.
I would like to say at this point that I have actually driven around Silverstone in a McLaren. It was green.
Nice, that's awesome.
I can't remember which
show off, Emma.
It was so great.
I'm glad you had fun. It's an awesome experience, right?
I did 150 miles an hour and felt like a legend.
That is legendary. That's awesome.
My question, Toby, is: does that mean you get to drive a Porsche IRL as well?
Guys, isn't it Porsche?
Porsche. Yeah, I think officially it is Porsche. But I just say Porsche.
I mean, so does everyone. But I just wanted to introduce some conflict.
Why not?
Devil's advocate. Do you get to drive a Porsche?
Daily?
Real life. Yeah.
Unfortunately not. But if I win a particular championship, then I can get the keys to one for a year. I'm going to be working hard to try and get that.
Of course.
Yeah. My day car's not quite as exciting.
Toby, thank you so much for sharing all this with us. It's so interesting. And I think you've done such an amazing job. I think, like, as a final kind of question, maybe, what would you say to people that are listening to this now who, if there are guys listening, which we hope there are, what's your advice to them?
My top tip and best advice I can give to any couple is get the guys tested. Thorough testing for men is so important. Mm-hmm. Pass the basic seam analysis, go and have an ultrasound, see a urologist, have a physical examination, get a DNA fragmentation test done, and then you've got a full picture of the male fertility side, just like your partner will have. And until you've got a full picture, you can't really make a proper diagnosis of what you need. And only until you've got those tests done, really, can you be sure exactly what's the correct treatment pathway. So I'm a massive advocate for that. And hopefully that's my 5 cents worth. Just go.
It's good.
Get tested, guys.
Get tested.
Yeah.
Massively.
Yep. Amazing. Well, look, Toby, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you on the track at some point.
Yeah, you have to come down and watch some racing. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, we'd love to.
I enjoyed that enormously.
Yes, so did I. Very much so. And thank you to Toby.
Yes.
And thank you to you, Emma.
That's okay, mate. Who are we talking to next week?
We're talking to a lovely woman called Elise, who is a Insta TikTok famous embryologist. I know, she's amazing.
Okay.
She's storming TikTok with her kind of behind the scenes, it's like sneak peeks of what happens in a clinic and an embryologist's life.
I missed this interview and I'm actually really gutted because I'm so fascinated by embryology.
Yeah, it is really interesting.
It's so interesting.
Yeah, well, Elise is on TikTok, mate. Just get on TikTok and you can watch her videos or Instagram. They're very good. They're very interesting. Like, lots of kind of up close footage of what's happening. Like, what kind of tools do they use? Like, what does the embryo go on? The little wand thing. It's really cool.
Ooh, very interesting. Okay.
Anyway, that's next week.
Yeah. See you all next week.
See you next week, guys.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.